If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Henry Melcher from Late Night. Welcome to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. We are on hiatus this week, and Seth is in Los Angeles to host the Golden Globes. While he was in town, he sat down with the hosts of Pod Save America, Tommy Vietor, Jon Lovett, and Jon Favreau, and here is that conversation.
What a year.
What a year.
Since you were last on.
You were one of our first interviews.
I know.
In 2017.
I feel like I'm real. I thought you guys got so big that I wouldn't be a good enough guest. So I'm really happy that a year into it, you will still have me on the pod.
Of course. We moved around so much stuff to be here at the Beverly Hilton with you.
This is important, too. That this is, we've now been bi-coastal because you guys came to the office the first time in New York.
We will follow you anywhere.
LA, New York, that's it. Okay.
You are hosting the Golden Globes for the first time.
I am.
How's the monologue coming?
It's coming along pretty well. Our writing staff will all be here as of tonight, and we will read through all the jokes this evening, and that will give us a way better sense of where we're at.
What's the process like?
So I was lucky enough to have been on the writing staff when Amy and Tina did it, so at least I've been through it before. And it really is, obviously, once you say yes, you think about it a lot, and then you start putting stuff down on paper. But we'll read through like 40 or 50 pages of jokes from not just the writers on my show, but other writers that I've known over the years that have all sort of chipping in.
Did you have any hesitation in saying yes? Like, what do you, when you get an invite to something like this, is it just like, it's the Golden Globe, so of course I go? Or do you think, is this going to be a useful platform?
I definitely always have hesitation about saying yes to anything, mostly from a place of self-doubt, I would say, more than anything else. But, you know, I think we went through a cycle of, oh, this is a terrible year to do it, and then, oh, maybe this is an interesting year to do it, or a year where you'll actually be able to talk about stuff that you wouldn't talk about in previous Globes. And then also, you just don't get to choose when you get asked to do these things. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can go back to them and say, you know, I'd love to pencil in 2019. I feel like I'd be a really good Globe since then. And so you say, if this is something that you always wanted to do, you just do it when the time comes.
We were talking before about how it was a weird week to not have a show. Like, we didn't have a show until Thursday. Felt like there was a lifetime of news. You've been off. Are you at a point where that bothers you? You're like, God, I got to get into this? Or are you like, okay to let one pass?
I think I'm okay to let one pass, mostly because this isn't the first off week I've had during the Trump administration where crazy stuff has happened. And it's amazing how often.
That would be any off week.
Yeah. But then on Monday, we'll be back because we'll fly back on Monday. We'll do a show on Tuesday. I believe this will all feel like old news to some degree.
It always does.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
One Globes question I think you're probably getting a lot is like, this has obviously been a weird year in Hollywood. There have been a lot of men who have behaved horribly, done illegal, sort of evil things. They deserve to be mocked and criticized and just destroyed at every award ceremony in perpetuity. But the other half of the room is women who were the victims of their behavior.
Yeah.
And they deserve support and sympathy. How do you as a comedian manage a challenge like that?
You have so many conversations with your writing staff, and we're really lucky to have women on our writing staff who have very strong opinions about this and getting the tone right. We're hopeful that there's a way to make jokes about this that is cathartic as opposed to just reminding everybody the litany of awful things that have happened. And hopefully the night will have this sense of optimism as far as what things will be like moving forward. That's what I'm hoping the solidarity of the night will be, and that would be lovely.
So one of the things I think Hollywood and the broader culture is grappling with is not just the men who conducted themselves horribly or committed crimes, sexually harassed women for decades and got away with it. It's the complicity in the rest of the industry, in the rest of our society. You know, and that's been, you know, Hollywood's been looking the other way on people like Harvey Weinstein and others for a long time. For example, the Golden Globes gave Woody Allen the Cecil B. DeMille Award in 2014.
Recently, yeah.
How do you address what's happening in Hollywood and address the hypocrisy and the failings that came before?
I have to be honest, I don't know. I think we can address how awful the behavior was this year. I think addressing that hypocrisy might be too big of a thing for us to handle in a Golden Globes monologue. I think it's an excellent point. But, you know, we ultimately will have 8 to 10 minutes where you want to address, you know, the issues that we've talked about this year, but you also want to make sure that you also start talking and making jokes about the movies and the people in the room and try to remind people that it's also a celebration, that people did excellent work despite all the awfulness that they had to get through to do it every day.
How much of the sort of Me Too revelations that have come to light over the last couple of months have you been shocked, surprised? Have you known this was going on? Just been asking people in different industries. Obviously, have a political viewpoint, but
I mean, I was aware. I certainly had heard rumors about a lot of these people.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized the extent of it. I'm in a unique situation, and I'm lucky to be in this situation. You know, my wife was a sex crime prosecutor. You know, she now works for basically a victims' rights advocacy and sexual crimes and sexual harassment. And so, you know, when this first started happening, and especially when it was names of people whose work you really respected, both in politics and in comedy and in films, like when that happened, I remember one point saying to her, this is all such a bummer. And her perspective of this is great. Like this, she's so happy this is happening. And, you know, and so I'm really lucky to, you know, be with somebody who has this different perspective on it. And like none of it surprises her at all. You know, that she is aware that people, that women can't even ride the subway in New York City without a stranger doing this. So she's not surprised that people with power have been doing it for years.
Let me ask you this. What is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association? Who are these people? Have you met them?
No, I met some of them. But I think there's that thing of anyone at this point could walk up to me in this hotel with a cartoon foreign accent and I would buy it.
Yeah, just a French thing, someone with a baguette and a piece of paper.
You know, the office is right by where you live.
Yeah.
And we always walk by it and I'm like, it's a small little office West Hollywood. And you're like, what?
Where
is
do
that
these
it?
People
What's
come from? They're wielding this power.
Yeah, and it's. I think it's only 93 voting members. Is that right? I'm getting a nod. 93. And when you think about it, like, and then people are upset that sometimes it's weird nominations. That it's basically like when you watch like what the UN does, like, and then when they get something wrong, like why would anybody expect there to be 93 foreign people from different countries would come to some weird consensus that we as a country would say that's great.
That's why they love The Tourist with Johnny Depp.
Yeah,
just brutal, a comedy. Brutal shot at the UN.
So let's talk about Trump. It's been now a year of his presidency, and you've been making fun of him quite a bit.
Yeah.
What surprised you about Trump's presidency in the first year?
I mean, I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say, because I feel like this has all been very much in line with what people thought would happen, that were warning people about Trump.
Right.
You know, everyone who said this is not a man who's fit for this job, this seems to be very much in step with it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little surprised at the people who have decided it's all okay.
Right.
But
are you surprised the way that Republicans in Congress have acted?
But then I don't know why I'd be surprised by that either. So anytime I think, I don't know, I guess it feels foolish to be surprised by any of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, it is so, it's the last week of news has been so incredible and yet not, Trump has this ability to shock you by not doing anything surprising, by being exactly who you thought he was going to be. But it is, I think, still a good thing that we're heartbroken by Republican failures to stand up for him. It's like, I don't know. It's like a pie is coming at our faces. And even though we know it's coming, it still feels weird to get hit in the face with a pie.
Yeah.
Good analogy?
I don't, but now, I can't even picture what it would look like to stand up. Like, I don't even see how that, now I realize that would be the most shocking thing, is like, there's enough's enough. Like, I can't see how that starts or what it looks like.
I don't know that person's treated as a hero either. I think they're savaged by the same people who have been complicit all along the way, and the mainstream press kind of takes on what they say for 24 hours, and then we move on to the next tweet. Yeah. I don't know that the system is set up to manage this. Like, I feel like, you ever had a friend who breaks up with someone who all your friends have known is horrible for like 2 or 3 years, and you get to them and you're finally like, you have Stockholm syndrome for real. Like, I do worry that that's us.
That's us? Are we the boyfriend? Are we the...
We're the person.
Who are we? Are we the person
who's been treated poorly?
Okay.
And it's been, over time, gotten worse and worse and worse.
We're like Paul Ryan. And
here we are.
We're like, Paul.
We love you.
Get out. Paul. We're your friends.
So,
but anyway. the other thing we forget. You know, it's I do think it's, you could argue this is much more a Republican agenda than a Trump agenda,
right?
Right.
And so,
because what is a Trump agenda,
right? And so you kind of have to look at it and say, you know, as angry as we are that nobody's standing up, I think they would just say we're getting exactly what we want.
Yeah.
So have you guys talked about this on the show about what is the Trump equivalent and that you would support as a Democrat? Like, that what. Who would be the Democrat in office that we would have to stand up and say to people?
Dan Pfeiffer used to say it was Kanye.
I think that's good, which is
I've been trying to think, though.
I don't know.
What would we do? Since Donald Trump doesn't really have any principles, ideology, agenda anyway, like, what would we be doing if Donald Trump woke up tomorrow and said, I want to pass single-payer health care? I want to do universal health care.
Oh, yeah, that's a better way of looking
at it. And I want to do all these, like, big time liberal priorities, and I'll pass them, but of course I am a criminal.
John, he's changing Washington. You're just not used to it. He's got a reality show accessibility, and everyone needs to just calm down. The bias in the media is out of control.
Yeah.
And I guess I would hope that we would, that Democrats would still stand up and say, okay, these are important priorities for us, but you can't completely divorce the priorities in the legislation from the person who's leading the country.
If he said, it's up to you, I'm either going to pass single payer or I'm going to resign and Mike Pence is going to take over.
Oof, that's hard.
I think we have to get him to resign. I think it's too... The North Korea tweet, right? Like, every once in a while, more often now than not, you get a reminder of why his presidency is dangerous in a bigger way than just the legislation he might pass. Yeah, right?
I think this is
your world. But.
Well, the North Korea tweet is insane. It's needlessly antagonizing a nuclear-armed dictator. But I also think, like, the Michael Wolff revelations that are most concerning to me are the man repeating the same 3 stories in 10 minutes over and over and over again, rinse, repeat. Like, we're finally having a conversation about whether he's in actual cognitive decline, and now it's coming from inside the House. And that feels like an important conversation.
And
the good thing about Pod Save America is we interview each other. Yeah. you just hang out.
When did Seth Meyers
like
get here?
Contest.
Was he here the whole time?
Yeah, he's been
so
great.
Funny. It's so this funny to really, have you.
I mean, it's so much different to be here in person.
I mean, look. thanks for wearing the T-shirt, by the way.
Of course.
So no, but look, I'll put the question to you then. You can keep Trump with the incompetence and craziness and small probability of incredibly dangerous events, or he can step down and you get Pence. And Pence is lower chance of total devastation, lower chance of the horrible, long, small risk things that we're all living under. But he will be more successful at passing the agenda that Paul Ryan wants.
Yeah.
You know, if we say that Trump is truly unique and a danger, we have to say that we prefer Pence. But do you?
Yes. I think based on what you just said, if we're saying now there's something wrong with his brain, you have to have somebody who has a working brain that just disagrees with you.
Yeah. It's also in a time when I have to remember, okay, my orientation is a white guy that's not threatened by having a racist president or a man who's like sexually assaulted all these women. Like, for anyone that isn't us, it's probably an obvious no-brainer. Pence. Move on.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, except Pence poses a great deal. You know, Pence will keep the Justice Department as it is currently running. He doesn't disagree with Jeff Sessions on marijuana or immigration. Mike Pence is anti-gay. Mike Pence likes Paul Ryan's agenda. You know, Mike Pence is dangerous in a lot of the same way as Donald Trump is, but I think the temperament argument is enough, I think.
But, you know, and also we live in a world, you guys more than me, half the time, probably, it's going to be someone who completely disagrees with you. And so you're like, okay, it's somebody who completely disagrees with me, but at least they, at their core, aren't like dangerous, knee-jerky.
Yeah. So you've said that when you're trying to make jokes about Trump, you don't just want to make fun of Trump. You want to talk about what matters and what the consequences are of his actions, which I think is wise. And we try to do that too. Do you think the media has done a good job of that in this first year of like making sure that they're focused on the consequences of his actions.
Well, I don't know. I think that there's really good stuff that happens in cable news, and also cable news is built to work a certain way. And
right.
I do think that sometimes investigative reporters will take to Twitter to criticize what cable news is talking about, and it seems like complaining to some degree like what color the sky is, like it's gonna be that. I feel like it's done a lot of good stuff, but it's also limited by being cable news.
Right.
I feel like, I don't know, it's like with everything, some people are doing great work and some
who
people
do you
aren't.
Like who thinks doing a great job?
I mean, I really like watching Jake Tapper.
Yeah.
I feel like as far as cable, I also realize that now like 4 PM is the best, like that now is prime time.
It is good. It is like, prime time.
So much happens that by I feel bad for people who actually do primetime cable news, because it's like, I know, we all know.
It's so strange, all of us keeping so tightly inside the news. It's
try
crazy.
Waking up on West Coast
the worst. It's brutal.
Well, I will say the best thing about being at work is I don't actually have time to follow the minute by minute of it. We had a day, we had to shut down production for a day and double tape on a Tuesday because of the tree lighting at 30 Rock.
Uh-huh.
So we had to do two shows on Tuesday and have Wednesday off. And then Wednesday was the, I want to say, Flynn plea deal.
Yeah.
And then so you just watch CNN all day and you realize like how basically you can give up 8 hours and get 2 minutes of information.
That's right.
But just fed through different filters and different people, and that it's a colossal waste of time.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the fact that when Trump news breaks, there's a million jokes that go out on Twitter, so it's like every angle has been covered within like an hour or two, and then you guys have to come up with jokes for that night. Like, do you take a different angle?
I mean, we try to take a different angle. There are definitely times where we have to drop something because someone says, oh, I saw that on Twitter. I think as a group, as a collective writing staff, we follow enough comedians that I think we try to catch stuff. We certainly, if anyone's seen it, we don't do it. It's possible that someone's done it and we haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, I'm guessing that most of the people that watch my show aren't as married to Twitter as I am.
Yeah,
right.
As anyone, which is
probably a good thing for everyone.
Probably, yeah.
So, of course, this year, you know, you've gone after Trump. You know, Kimmel's been outspoken. Mm-hmm. Colbert has. Every time that happens, you know, a lot of critics, mostly conservatives, right-wingers, say, stay in your lane. They're not supposed to be political.
Yeah.
Do you take any of that seriously?
No, I don't. I don't. It's not a bad intellectual argument. Like, I get that people say that, but I feel like everything changes. And when people talk about Johnny Carson, you know, everything's, that's like, I feel like it's like, you know, the Super Bowl used to be in standard definition. Stuff's different.
Great, yeah.
Everything changes.
Now there's too much detail.
Yeah.
I don't need to see, I don't need to see the dimples on the pig skin. You know?
Just saw the colors.
Yeah.
You saw the colors of the helmets.
Do you personally feel fatigued though? Like, there's some days I wake up on Monday mornings and I think, are we going to go in and sit in that box on La Cienega and shout about Trump again? Like, there's so many important things that we want to be talking about that sometimes don't get on.
Well, that I do feel is that unfair criticism of the media. I don't know how you do. And again, I don't think he's playing three-dimensional chess, but it's impossible. I do feel like he's chucking chess pieces at us.
I would love for someone to ask him, how does the queen move? What are the rules of that? The three-dimensional chess
people.
Well,
that would be, the only reason I believe he plays three-dimensional chess is he doesn't understand two-dimensional. Yeah. Like, moves it off the board.
He makes them characters. I'm a castle. I eat your crown, man.
But, you know, I don't know. Like, at some point, if people are throwing stuff at you, like, I feel like you have to duck or get out of the way. Like, that's what I feel like more that how you react to Trump news is like, it's almost self-defense. And so as much as you want to say, like, oh, I'd love to be talking about this, you know, that would be like not, you know, there's no way to ignore the North Korea tweet.
Right.
nor should we really.
Yeah. I mean, so, but yet, you know, everybody only has so much bandwidth and we only have so much time on our show. And we try to do things about, step back and talk about things like the VA or other issues that are happening while this is happening. But it is hard. And I don't know. I don't know if it benefits them or not.
So, in part because of Trump, and I think in part because of a bunch of different trends, I think there's a few different political comedy shows or comedy shows that take on politics, from The Daily Show to John Oliver to your show to Samantha Bee and others, that I think we would all admit sort of come from a liberal perspective. And you'll take on Democrats and you'll take on Republican, take on the media, but it is a similar worldview that we're all tackling. Do you see anyone out there that you like that's coming at it from a totally different direction?
I mean, I think there are some stand-up comedians who do a really good job of not approaching it from the same conventional wisdom of liberal-minded talk shows. But I do think it's a different, you know, that's like sort of an hour a year or an hour every 6 months, which is a different thing. And I think that there are, you know, people like, you know, Bill Burr or Patrice that sort of, you know, who he was very good at taking something from the opposite side of what maybe his audience thought and approaching it that way. But as far as like a day-to-day deconstructing the news, I don't know if there's anybody out there who's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, it's sort of a, it's like, how do you challenge liberals at a time in which liberals have plenty of, we're challenged from the outside. It's not like one of these liberals is going to get some perspective. It's like, actually, you know, maybe liberals are missing some shit, but right now we have a crisis.
Yeah.
Right. But so, but like, do you ever worry about that? I mean, I think we worry about that, about like, are we not challenging people enough on our own shit because we're dealing with this emergency?
Yes, absolutely. And we, again, much like we'd love to find time to talk about other issues, I would love to find time to drill down on that too. But again, that goes back to, you know, we had the instinct of leading up to the election. Are we doing enough about Hillary? Are we criticizing Hillary enough? Are we talking enough about Hillary's emails? I mean, those were conversations we were having. Yeah. And now I feel like they're still adjudicating it on Twitter as far as like, did you you talked too much about that, you know?
Now we're here.
Yeah, but like, was, you know, there, but for the grace of God, we would have done that too. Like, we were very close to talking more about
You almost did your Comey letter.
I almost did my Comey letter. I had mine written.
Who are you wearing?
Valentino, is that correct?
Who cares?
Great. Well, do.
Do you see your role as purely trying to entertain your audience every night, or are you trying to get people to think differently about politics, even if it's not a purely partisan goal? Like, do you see, is there any other obligation or role that you see that you have right
it's
now?
It's weird. When I went into it, I just wanted to do a really entertaining show.
Right.
I then found it was more entertaining for me to talk about politics. I felt more engaged in the show. It seems as though our audience then felt more engaged. I think the best we probably provide is information in a way that is maybe more cathartic than getting it through conventional news. You know, I've always stressed that we're a better second or third news source than a first one, but if you've kind of listened to the news...
Disagree.
Hard no. Hard
us,
no.
Us first and last. Seth second.
Do you ever feel pressure from corporations to not be political, like sponsors pulling out or things like that? Because...
No.
We're in the process of having conversations with people about whether Pots of America could be on a video format, and like, it's a thing we think about in here.
I have been very lucky. I can say that NBC was really supportive of the move to more politics. Never heard a word from them about anything when we've talked about politics on the show, and that's been really nice. And certainly nothing. I feel like we'd hear if sponsors were pulling out. You know, I don't think, based on politics, I doubt I'll be a national spokesman in a commercial for anything that...
For Nationwide?
Yeah. Anything that both red and blue America need.
Yeah.
No one's throwing their Keurigs out the window or anything.
Yeah, no.
Let me ask you this.
Great. And thank you, by the way. Nobody's told me a question's forthcoming. They're just coming at me without any preamble.
Don't want to do that to you. Now, look, we wrote jokes for the 2011 Correspondents' Dinner. You wrote jokes for 2011 Correspondents' Dinner. The jokes were so good that it caused Trump to run and become president.
Yeah.
Are you going to attack anyone at the Golden Globes so thoroughly that they then run for president? Are you going to focus on Hanks?
Mark Cuban.
Ideally, Streep would be good. Is there someone you're going to pin?
Oh, interesting. So you're saying attack someone that you think would be good at it.
Now that we all have the superpower.
Right. Yeah. Like, don't be careful that it's not like Weinstein Toback 2020. Yeah.
That would be very rough.
So, oh, this is your...
Let's get ahead of this thing.
You're three-dimensional.
Because
Oprah's going to be there.
Ooh. Is Oprah going to be there?
So go hard at Oprah.
Very hard at Oprah. Right. You'll never be president, Oprah. No one would buy it.
Yeah.
You're too much of a joke for that. Your ego can't take it.
This is actually... I almost want to ask you guys to edit this out, because this is actually a pretty good monologue.
This is a good idea.
Yeah. Back to the drawing board, staff.
We'll edit it out as long as I can take credit later.
Mm-hmm. Seth Meyers, thank you for joining us as always.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck on Sunday.
Appreciate it.
And I'm sure you'll do perfectly.
All right. Thanks, guys. I don't know.
That was
weird. Weird ending. He said it in a weird way. Leaving all this in.
I don't know him as well as you guys. Is that a genuine shirt?
He gets up. He says it's, you know, he's trying.
I'm trying.
He's very nice. It's a very, it's, it comes from a good place.
That was just genuine. I don't know. I don't know what I did.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.